Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Kilowatt. My name is Bodie, and I am your host, and it is another Saturday that I'm recording this show. Man, I don't want to say that I had a bad week, because I didn't have a bad week, but I had a lot of really frustrating things happen this week, and let me just kind of walk you through a few, if you don't mind, just real quick. First, I was at work. I was going to make a really delicious dinner that included a ton of vegetables and chicken, and I prepped all the food. And I went to pull the vegetables out of the refrigerator because I prepped it like 4 hours earlier, and I dropped all of the vegetables on the ground. Now, if you live in a firehouse, you don't eat anything that touches the ground because you walk through all sorts of gross, disgusting things when you're on a scene. So you just don't eat that food. So I was like, well, I'm going to throw this, all these beautiful vegetables away. And that hurts my heart because I love vegetables. But I was like, I got this meat. So I'll make the meat and I'll make the best of it. And about 8 minutes later, 10 minutes later, I dropped all of the meat and the bowl that it was in on the floor, broke the bowl. And ultimately, I just ended up eating some hummus, some naan bread, and apple pie because the apple pie was to comfort me. Last night I was prepping the show, getting all the clips ready. I was about halfway through. It was 10 o'clock at night. I was about halfway through pulling the clips from the 2019 Q2 Tesla conference call. And I was using keyboard shortcuts, and I was like, okay, this is going really well. I'm moving fast. And somehow I shut the program down, and it asked me if I wanted to save, and I said no because I wasn't paying attention. And guess what? I lost all of that work. So I got really frustrated. If I had to say that I had a superpower, it is not the fact, like, obviously I'm not great at public speaking, but if I had a superpower, I am really great at creative cursing. And I had a string of swear words last night because I lost 2 hours of work simply because I wasn't paying attention to a keyboard shortcut and then a dialogue box. I just clicked no because that's my habit, is just to click no before reading. Lost 2 hours of work. And then today I woke up, because last night I was like, I'm going to bed. I'll start over tomorrow. Today I woke up, had a couple of things to do, repairs around the house. I went to Home Depot no less than 4 times, and I went to Ace Hardware 1 time today. Because all of these simple repairs, I kept breaking things throughout the simple repairs. Now, I'm a person that firmly believes you make your own luck. And I was probably rushing through a bunch of these things because tomorrow we're hosting a retirement party for my old captain. I mean, he's an old guy, but he was a captain that I worked with for 10 years. I love and adore this guy. Today's his last shift. So we're having a retirement party for him tomorrow. So trying to get all these little problems fixed that I've been on my list. And then we're also trying to, get the house ready for guests, which includes renting tables and all that, getting everything set up. And we normally do our big cleaning days on Saturday and Sunday anyway, so that's just normal. But I just want to say, like, hopefully this show goes well, because My week has been just a series of little bitty, insignificant, frustrating moments that have come to a head, and I am done. Like, I was putting a light switch cover on a light switch, and I broke the light switch cover, and I had to go to Home Depot to buy a stupid light switch cover. That was the last time I went to Home Depot. I mean, come on. Like, I was just adjusting the way the light switch sat in the box, you know? I didn't like the way it was sitting. I probably did not need to do anything with this light switch. I could have just left it alone, but I was like, you know what? I don't like the way that sits. It looks crooked. So I fixed it, and then I broke the light switch plate. It's just, you know, one of those days. So let's talk about something that I like. Something that I like is Rob. We have not found an answer for Rob, and I would really like to. So Rob wants to buy a 85 kilowatt hour battery, a Model S with an 85 kilowatt hour battery, but he's concerned about the software downgrades or the software update that downgrades the battery. So if you have an answer, if that was significant for you, if you have a Model S with an 85 kilowatt hour battery and that was significant to you, would you please email me, Bodie, B-O-D-I-E, at 918digital, so we can get Rob an answer. I'd really appreciate that. Okay, let's see here. Normally in this spot, I do a Patreon plug, and I'm not going to do that this week. And the reason why is I get, believe it or not, I am very aware that the volume on this podcast is very low. And I explained a little bit of this last week. It's because my preamp is not powerful enough to power my mic. So I basically have to turn my preamp all the way up well, it's not all the way. I can't turn it all the way up because there would be a lot of distortion, all the way up to the point of distortion just to get to where we are now. And I have some other things. I have a cloud that's supposed to boost the signal, and that has helped for a little bit. But there's just a lot of things plugged in to this preamp to get it to where it is now. So I went ahead and I bought a Universal Audio Aero preamp, which comes highly recommended in the podcast community. I know that it'll work with my Heil PR40 mic. And this thing costs $500. So I hope to God that it works, because my current preamp was about $130. So fingers crossed, this will be a much better sound. That will come because I didn't order it off of Amazon, and it said it'd take 10 days to get here, which is ridiculous in today's day and age. But okay, I'll wait. It doesn't come till Wednesday of next week. So this is the last podcast that you will hear me on this Scarlett 2i2 preamp. My next preamp will be much better, much higher quality. So here's what I would like you to do. If you like the higher quality preamp, this thing costs $500. The Patreon account only had $60 in it, and I covered the rest of it. And I'm totally fine with that. I only use the Patreon money, like I said, for this show. I don't use it for anything else. And at this point, I don't even use the Patreon money for the monthly expenses of the show, like hosting and things like that. I only use it for big purchases like the software that we leased and now the preamp. So just so you know, like, I'm not trying to live off of money that you give to the show. It really does go back into the show. So if you're on the fence and next week's podcast, you like the way that it sounds, would you please consider going to Patreon and just taking a peek? You don't even have to, donate anything or become a patron. Just go to patreon.com/kilowatt and take a peek and see if there's something that would interest you there. I am doing more Patreon-only exclusive content, and if you're a Patreon exclusive or a Patreon member, you're going to get something either at the end of this month or the beginning of next month. Kind of depends on how much time I have on Monday, since the month ends, you know, next week. So anyway, I'll get off of that. Hopefully the show will sound so much better. So tune in next week to see how it sounds. I'm really excited. But today we are going to talk about Tesla's Q2 2019 quarter results. Let me pull up my cheat sheet here. We got clips on clips on clips. I cleaned up a lot of the pauses, the stammers, and some of the ums and ahs. I didn't do it on every single clip because sometimes it made the clip sound weird. But Elon does a lot of stammering, ums, ahs, long pauses. So it takes a lot of time to remove those. But I believe that in the end, it's more efficient for you, the listener, and it doesn't really add anything to have them in there. So like I said, it took me 2 hours last night to do the whole, to do about half or a little over half of the show. Tonight, I was a little bit more efficient. I was able to do the whole thing in about 2 hours. So I guess, you know, there was a positive there. I got faster at it. So let's listen to Elon's opening remarks. It's about 7 minutes long, and I will see you on the other side.
But before we jump into Q&A, Elon has some opening remarks. Elon?
Thank you. So last quarter, we delivered more than 95,000 vehicles, which is a record for Tesla. Put that in perspective, it's nearly an 80% increase in deliveries compared to the second quarter of last year. It's sometimes hard for people to appreciate when you have a large manufactured item with a complex global supply chain, just how difficult that is. I'm incredibly proud of the Tesla team for being able to do that. I think this level of growth is possibly unprecedented. It might be the fastest that any large complex manufactured item has grown in history. Really great work by the Tesla team to achieve that outcome. And you know, we expect growth to continue into the future at, you know, for several years to come at the 50 to 100% level. Yeah, I just like generally think that is not well appreciated, how difficult it is to grow at that rate. Achieving a record number of deliveries is an important milestone and shows the rapid progress we've made in managing a global logistics and delivery operation at high volume. As I said, all this was achieved thanks to the tremendous hard work of the entire Tesla team. Model 3 was once again the best-selling premium vehicle in the U.S., outselling all of its gas-powered equivalents combined. In Europe, Model 3 is approaching sales levels of its established premium competitors, and it was awarded a 5-star rating from the Euro NCAP earlier this month. This is in addition to Model 3 receiving an overall 5-star rating in the U.S. from NHTSA, and including earning 5 stars in every category and subcategory, and achieving the lowest probability of injury of any vehicle ever tested. Motor Trend also recently selected Model S as the best vehicle they have ever tested in their 70-year history across all other cars. So Motor Trend, which is arguably the leading authority in evaluating vehicles, the Motor Trend Car of the Year is the most coveted award. It's pretty incredible that they would say that Model S in their entire 70-year history is the best vehicle they have ever evaluated. But this is despite Tesla not buying any advertising in Motor Trend. And I think it speaks to their journalistic integrity. That's something special. So, and since the vehicle that they evaluated, we've actually made tremendous advancements in both Model S and Model X, including our recent update of a new suspension with active damping capability and an all-new drivetrain that's capable of a 370-mile range in the Model S and a 325-mile range in the Model X. We've also issued numerous software updates and improvements that have made Model S and Model X faster, safer, and added dozens of new features. Just like Model 3, Model S and X have the hardware needed for future full self-driving capability. As we look ahead to the rest of the year and into 2020, we remain focused on launching new vehicle and energy programs, further expanding our manufacturing operations, and continuing to improve customer service. We remain focused on international expansion because local production is essential to being cost competitive. By the end of this year, we expect to be producing Model 3s in volume out of Gigafactory Shanghai. And as you can see from the photos in our quarterly letter, equipment installation there is progressing well. We also hope to finalize a location for our European Gigafactory before the end of the year. Here in Fremont, preparations for Model Y production have already begun. Since Model Y has high component overlap with Model 3, it should be, and we expect it to be, a lot easier to ramp. So something on the order of three-quarters of all the parts are common between Model 3 and Model Y. And we expect manufacturing costs for Model Y, despite additional content, to be approximately the same as Model 3. This quarter, we opened 25 new service locations and added more than 100 mobile service vehicles to our fleet. And although our total Tesla fleet size has doubled in the past 12 months, which is, like, again, just a kind of a crazy thing to consider, that Tesla is almost doubling all cumulative production every year. This is a totally mad thing to make as many cars in a year as we've made in our entire history, and to have that be an ongoing trend. I think it is difficult for people to really feel an exponential. So we didn't evolve to feel an exponential. We can feel a linear, but we can only understand an exponential at a cognitive level. Tesla is expanding at an exponential rate. And in fact, if you look at the Tesla cumulative deliveries chart, like year-over-year cumulative deliveries, it's about the cleanest exponential graph I've ever seen. So obviously, if that trend continues, the results, I think, are going to be pretty amazing. And I think that will continue. So we've been able to improve service considerably. And you can imagine that if we're doubling our fleet every year, managing service is quite difficult. It's like the total, because service scales as the, not just with new production, but as the total fleet scales, service needs to scale. And we want to scale service in a way that's sensible from a cost standpoint. It's really quite a difficult challenge to scale. Nonetheless, we've made massive improvements in service, especially in parts waiting, time to wait for parts and in collision repair. And we've insourced quite a great deal of the collision repair activities, which has had, I think, quite a good effect on customer happiness. And this will continue in the months to come. Very important milestone. I think we believe Tesla is now at the point of being self-funding, and we expect to be free cash flow positive in future quarters, with the possible temporary exceptions around the launch and ramp of a new product. From a profitability standpoint, we expect to be probably around break-even this quarter and profitable next quarter. I feel pretty confident about that. In terms of deliveries, we expect deliveries to be between 360 and 400,000. We expect production to be a slightly higher number than that, and demand to be a slightly higher number than that. So people often confuse deliveries, production, and orders for Tesla, and they're actually three different numbers. You obviously cannot deliver more than you make, so typically we'll make more than we deliver. And then demand generation activities kind of move in kind of like a to get together with production. Like it doesn't make sense to put a lot of effort into demand generation if production can't meet the demand. And likewise, what tends to happen is that we'll solve the production issues. Then it's like, okay, we need to increase demand to address demand. Then increase production, then increase demand. Like people get caught up in these details a lot, but if you look at the actual results, like I said, look at cumulative deliveries over time for Tesla. Cleanest exponential I've ever seen. Extrapolate that curve. So there's a tremendous amount to be excited about at Tesla, and we'll have more to share in the coming weeks and months.
I think this is a good overview of where Tesla was in the second quarter of 2019, and even before that, and then where Tesla wants to be in the future. If I'm being honest, this was not the most exciting Q2 Tesla earnings call that there's ever been. It was pretty milquetoast. They're kind of in between some things. Even though they had a record quarter, they lost $400 million. Elon says he expects the next two quarters to be profitable or break even. And then there'll be a dip in profitability when new products are coming online, like the Model Y, the Tesla Semi, and the Roadster, and the Tesla pickup, that kind of thing. Now we're going to hear from Zach Kirkhorn, who's Tesla's CFO, and he kind of puts a positive spin on the quarter. He adds to and sums up a lot of what Elon said. And I included this clip mainly because we have a lot of Tesla shareholders who listen to the show, and I think that they would find this interesting. So let's take a listen.
A few things I want to highlight before moving into the Q&A. Overall, Q2 was a strong quarter for Tesla. I'm extremely proud of the team for the progress we've made. We've achieved record vehicle production and delivery, record storage production and deployment, record services and other revenue with a corresponding reduced loss. As we've mentioned a few times, we stabilized international logistics and delivery operations at higher volumes. And we saw gross margin improvement in nearly every aspect of the business, adjusting for the impact of regulatory credit revenue. As a result of these accomplishments, we once again achieved strong free cash flows, which is only partially attributed to working capital benefits. We also successfully raised roughly $2.4 billion in net proceeds in May. Thus, we exited the quarter with $5 billion in cash and cash equivalents, the highest in our history. Our net loss reduced significantly relative to Q1, aided by higher volumes and progress on cost efficiencies. A few things to note. There's $117 million within operating expenses for restructuring. We had a sequential reduction of $104 million related to regulatory credits, which is inherently lumpy. And in our other income line, we saw a $66 million reduction. This is nearly entirely due to foreign exchange, which we don't hedge. GAAP automotive gross margin only reduced slightly despite the reduction in credit revenue and expected reductions in our vehicle average selling prices. Adjusting for the impact of credits, automotive gross margin improved materially. For Model S and Model X, ASPs were impacted by pricing actions applied to inventory of vehicles built prior to the launch of our powertrain and suspension upgrades in April, the majority of which were sold and delivered in Q2. For Model 3, global ASPs stabilized during the quarter at roughly $50,000, a sequential reduction, yet gross profit per Model 3 improved, representing the continued success of our cost management efforts. Note that we continue to defer a significant portion of revenue associated with full self-driving, which will be recognized in future periods upon the release of additional features. Operating expenses net of restructuring continues to improve as well, despite the increases in volume, reflecting the immense focus on improving our operating efficiency. And while operating expenses and capital expenses may appear to be unnaturally low this quarter, that's not the case. Rather, these reflect continued progress on cost efficiency and ability to scale our core technologies and processes. If we take a step back here, I think it's important to remember that Tesla is on a long-term journey, and it's difficult to see the full picture looking quarter to quarter. We committed that Model 3 would be a transformative product both for the industry and our business. 3 years ago, we unveiled the Model 3. 2 years ago, we brought the product to market. 1 year ago, we demonstrated our ability to build the Model 3 at high rate. So far this year, we've demonstrated our ability to manage global deliveries and logistics at a higher rate, but the most important thing is that we've demonstrated our ability to generate significant organic demand, as nearly all orders generated in Q2 were non-reservation holders. And thus far in Q3, our order pacing is ahead of where we were at this point in Q2, and as we noted in our Q2 production and delivery release, our order backlog increased over the course of Q2. Ultimately, the Model 3 is accomplishing what our business needs it to do. It expanded our sales and customer base, enabling us to generate cash we need to reinvest. In the process, we've appropriately managed our operating expenses and have reduced the cost of running the business. This is critically important because I feel as though we've broken through a baseline fixed cost barrier enabled by the success of the Model 3 business. With continued focus on execution and cost management, the next 12 to 18 months should be the most exciting yet. During this time, we believe that Gigafactory Shanghai will be producing at scale. Model Y will be in production, addressing the most popular vehicle segment. Our European Gigafactory will be well underway. Our autonomous driving feature suite will continue to develop. Energy products business will grow, and maybe a few other things along the way. And while there is inherent risk in any large and ambitious set of projects, our intent is to grow and invest as fast as we can afford to. With the cash we have on hand and the stabilization of Model 3 across the key areas, as I've noted, we believe we're in great shape for this next phase of growth.
In the next clip, Elon's going to talk about J.B. Straubel, the CTO and co-founder of Tesla. He's moving on to a senior advisor role, and he's kind of stepping aside as a CTO, a chief technology officer. Drew Braglino. He's taking over. I recognize this name, so I went back and looked at the Autonomy Day and the shareholders meeting. And it was during the shareholders meeting that Elon, Drew, and JB were all on stage. And I thought that this was really weird because it didn't really seem to work because a lot of what Drew was saying, JB had already said or vice versa. And I didn't think it added really anything to their message. Well, now we know why they brought him up there, because they were just kind of giving us an introduction to this guy, Drew, who is on board with what JB's doing. Elon and JB have confidence in this guy. And, you know, more than that, they're just kind of introducing the shareholders and the world to, you know, the new CTO. Although I don't know if they've said he's definitely going to be the CTO. If you listen to Elon, he says that Drew is going to take over some of JB's duties. So I don't know what that means exactly. Although there's a lot of outlets claiming that he's going to be the CTO. I didn't hear anybody say that directly from Tesla.
Important update. J.B. Straubel, co-founder and chief technology officer, will be transitioning to a senior advisor from the CTO role, and Drew Baglino will be taking over at most of J.B.'s responsibilities. I'd like to thank J.B. for his fundamental role in creating and building Tesla. Thank you, J.B.
Thanks, Elon.
If we hadn't had lunch in 2003, Tesla wouldn't exist, basically.
It's been quite an adventurous 16 years.
Yeah. Lunch with you and Hal Rosen at Smith & McCormick & Schmick's in El Segundo. That's the reason Tesla exists.
I remember it well.
Yes.
And maybe just to add a bit more to that, I'm not disappearing, and, I just want to make sure that people understand that this is not some, lack of confidence in the company or the team or anything like that. I love the team and I love the company, and I always will. Drew and I have worked closely together for many, many years, and, I have total confidence in Drew and not going anywhere. If there's anything I need to do to be helpful to Drew or the whole team or any of the ongoing projects. I mean, I'm actually, really happy with how we've kind of, phased and transitioned some of these different projects and people in, and I feel like this is a super good process overall. Drew, you want to say anything?
I'll just say, obviously big shoes to fill, JB, but we have been working closely. In fact, we were even talking about this project back in 2003 all along. And
But you guys talked about it in 2003 as well?
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
2003 is a big year.
I was graduating and I didn't know what to do. So
okay.
I was like, we should do this project. I feel exactly as you feel, that we are well set up, that we know how to get help when we need to from you, and that we're very excited about the growth ahead of us, myself and the whole team. So.
And I'm excited to stay involved in some of our core technologies and follow that and help where I can, just in less of an operational, obviously less, not an executive type role.
Well, JB, thanks again for your instrumental role in creating this company, and Drew as well.
I don't think JB would be leaving this company if he thought that he wasn't leaving it in good hands. He doesn't seem to be, and granted, I don't know who this guy is. I'm just basing this off of doing this podcast for almost 3 years now. But he doesn't seem to be a guy who's just like, I'm tired of this, I'm out. He seems like he's going to be the guy that's like, I'm tired of this, but I'm going to make sure we leave the company in good hands before I go. So he's made his money. I think it's normal for him to leave at this point. He's been there for like 16 years. That's a lot. I do think it's important to note that Tesla was initially founded by Martin Eberhard and Mark Tarpanian. And they don't usually get their names brought up as founders. It's usually Elon and JB. And Elon and JB were definitely instrumental early on and were retroactively given the title of co-founders. But it was Martin and Mark that really came up with the whole concept. So I just wanted to give those guys their due. Now we're going to get to some retail investor questions. And the first question has to do with demand versus supply constraints.
It has been stated that Tesla is supply constrained, not demand constrained. Can you help us shed some light on why Tesla is lowering car cost if supply is constrained?
Sure. There's a number of things to consider here. There's really two key dimensions for demand. There's value for money, and then there's affordability. Obviously, if somebody simply does not have enough money to buy the car, it doesn't matter how good the value for money is. You can have infinite value for money. If somebody does not have the funds to buy the car, they simply can't get it. It's just very important to parse those two. And, I think there's a tremendous amount of desire to buy our cars, but people obviously, if they don't have enough money to buy them, they cannot. So we have to make the cars more affordable. Effectively, in the U.S., our cars got almost $2,000 more expensive with the expiry of the tax credit on July 1, or the partial expiry. We only dropped the price of the Standard Range Plus Model 3 by $1,000, about $1,000. Base Model 3 actually got $8,000 more expensive, which seemed like a reasonable compromise. That's essentially what I mean. People sometimes just have these sort of pretty absurd notions, like if if demand is high, can't you just charge any price? Like, no, you cannot charge any price. I think making our cars more affordable is also fundamentally part of the Tesla mission.
There's more to this clip, but I'm not going to make you listen to all the financial speak. But the TLDR here is that gross margins will be going up after the full self-driving software becomes kind of fully baked. And this makes sense. The hardware is already in the cars. They're already collecting all the data from the cars. They just need to flip a switch, which costs Tesla nothing but costs the consumer, you know, $6,000 to $7,000, and that price was going to incrementally increase over time. Elon reiterates this later in the call, that autopilot being added to the cars is going to be, you know, having that feature turned on is going to really boost Tesla's bottom line. They've also decreased Model 3's labor costs by more than 50% in 1 year, so that's going to help them become more profitable, and that's probably where they're looking at next quarter and the quarter after that. They've cut their scrap costs down, I think, to 90%, they said, or by 90%, so that's going to make it cheaper for the Model 3. And the last thing that Elon said was that Tesla needs to make a cheaper car or more affordable car. More affordable for who? More affordable for Tesla or more affordable for us, the consumer? Because he has made mention in the past that when full self-driving comes out, the price of the Teslas are going to go up because they'll be more valuable. I don't know if that's true, and I don't know if the market can bear that, but he has mentioned that, and nobody really pushed him on that today. Like I said, it was kind of a tame investor's call. So let's hear about Battery and Powertrain Day, which is going to happen sometime in probably February, it sounds like. So it's about a 2 minute, it's about a 45 second clip, so it'll be real quick.
Thank you very much. The second question is, many of us who follow Tesla closely are incredibly excited about a Battery and Powertrain Investor Day and its technology implications. Can you provide us any more detail on when this will be and what will be covered?
For our Battery Day, we're going to do a comprehensive review of cell chemistry, module and pack architecture, and a manufacturing plan that it has a clear roadmap to a terawatt hour per year. Now, the timing for this probably is about 6 months, like maybe February or March next year. Show and tell.
I'm actually really excited about the battery and powertrain show and tell. Whether those are on the same day or on different days, doesn't matter. I think those are very interesting. But producing a terawatt of power per year is really, that's huge, because right now I think they're at 28 or so gigawatts, and still that's a lot. So terawatt of power, battery power per year, and I think they're considering over all of their factories, including the Panasonic factories where they get the battery cells for the Model S and Model X. I think they're including that in that terawatt, not just that giga. In China, they have, sounds like they have a supplier, but they're not saying anything about it. I didn't put this clip in there, but they don't expect to have any cell constraints for at least 1 year in China. So it sounds like they got that wrapped up, at least for a year anyway. And like I said, they didn't really say anything else meaningful on batteries throughout the rest of the call. So it's just kind of an update. In our next clip, Elon's going to talk about service, and not like customer service, but like getting your car repaired. And one of the interesting things, and I'm going to spoil it a little bit, is that Tesla and Elon want to get rid of service altogether. They want to make their cars so that you don't need to have them serviced, or rarely need to have them serviced. And that's the best service experience for the customer. And I would wholeheartedly agree with that. A lot of dealerships, car dealerships, and probably all car dealerships, rely on the revenue that comes directly from their service department. And like I said, Tesla just wants to eliminate that. One of the things can't remember if they mentioned in the clip or not, I might have cut it out, is the number one visit, the number one reason customers visit the service center is to learn how to use autopilot, which I thought was interesting. Now, having said all that, let's listen to Elon's service center update here.
You stated on the Q4 2018 earnings call that customer service was a personal priority for 2019. Can you update us on what has been done to date to ensure that all owners are receiving an industry-leading customer experience?
I meet with the service team multiple times a week and get daily updates on the reliability of the vehicle. You know, like the best service, of course, is no service. Like that's the vehicle just reliability and quality being so good that service is rarely required. That's the main goal. It's like eliminate the need for service. Then in terms of increasing service resources, as I mentioned, we're opening service centers as fast as we can, and have already opened 25 new service locations this quarter, and that will increase the rate of service center opening will increase dramatically again through the course of this year, as well as more mobile service. Mobile service is really great because it's like we just come to you and fix the car wherever you are, and it's hard to beat that for convenience. For parts delivery, we've made massive improvements to the logistics for getting parts to service centers. I mean, Jerome, do you want to helping manage the service, the global service? And
yeah, as you pointed out, service, the best service is no service. So we're trying to continue improving the quality of the cars. I'm tracking this daily, and fewer and fewer service visits are required for the most recent cars that we're building. So we're on a good trend there. We also need a lot fewer work to finish the cars in the factory. Besides that, we store way many more parts at all the service centers, and we ship everything same day, pretty much, so that people don't have to wait for parts, and we accelerate service, and we increase capacity. There's a lot of improvements that we've already implemented, and many more on the way. So I'm relatively optimistic, and I'm happy to help with.
One of the things that stresses me out the most about owning a car is having it serviced. And the reason why is because every time I go into a service center, I feel like the person or a mechanic shop, I feel like they're trying to rip me off. I feel like they're trying to take my money, and I don't know if they're actually doing anything. I don't know if they're doing the right stuff. I don't know if they're causing more damage intentionally or unintentionally. So, like, for me, having Tesla, who has no interest in making money off of their service, having them come to my house and say, hey, look, this is what you need. This is what it's going to cost. It makes me feel more comfortable as a consumer, even though I'm sure that it's going to cost a lot more money. But in the past, I've owned Volkswagens, and everything on a Volkswagen costs more money. So I kind of already have that in my head, that it's going to cost a ton of money to fix anything in a car. But to me, and I bet you to a bunch of other consumers, it just feels better to have, you know, I've got a nice sized garage. I can pull the Tesla in there all by itself, and, you know, the service guy can work until his heart's content in my garage, and I can just sit at home and, you know, record this podcast. It seems like a utopia to me, if I'm being honest. All right. Our final retail investor's question is about Gigafactory 1, and is Tesla cell constrained?
In April, Gigafactory 1 had efficiency of about 23 out of the 35 gigawatt hours theoretical capacity. Has this been approved yet, and is Tesla still cell constrained? Are there any near-term plans to increase the plant theoretical capacity?
Andrew?
We have seen improvements in the 23 gigawatt hour number. We're in the high 20s now, with the trajectory continuing upward. We're
about 28-ish?
Yeah, 28-ish, yep. Yeah. I would say we're not cell-constrained for any of our activities at the moment.
Cell volume is approximately matching the production ramp rate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now we're going to move on to the analyst Q&A section. And again, this was not the most exciting earnings call. So a lot of it I didn't use, but I think, you know, what I do have in here, which is five or six things, is kind of important to us, the community, and you, the listeners, and the folks who are also investors. So hopefully you get something out of this section. The first clip we have is Model 3 cannibalizing S and X sales?
Elon, I'm wondering if you can comment on whether you believe Model 3 is having any cannibalization impact on S and X sales, or, you know, why you think that, or why else there might be sort of a structural step down in the demand and delivery levels relative to what we've seen, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years.
Actually, we're just talking about this earlier today. We're not quite sure ourselves. I think that there's some cannibalization. I think maybe a false expectation in the market that there's like some big overhaul coming for SNX, which then, you know, causes people to hesitate to buy if they think there's like some radical redesign coming, which is why I emphasize publicly that this is not the case. The model SNX today are radically better than the ones that, you know, when we first started production, especially S. Like, say, like 2013 or 2012 Model S compared to today's Model S, night and day. In fact, I still run into people I know who have, like, 2013 Model S, and they think it hasn't changed. I'm like, it is dramatically better in every way. But we don't do model years. We just roll in improvements as they come. So, you know, but I think there is maybe a communications issue where people don't realize just how much better the SNX are today than when we first started. And we obviously want to address that communications issue and just get better, a better understanding, you know, from the front lines. Like, demand should be higher for SNX than it is, and we'll get to the bottom of it and fix it.
So Elon's really hitting that there's no big Model S or X redesign coming, which is breaking my heart, if I'm being honest, only because that I really thought I was going to be there, and I made really confident statements that the redesign was going to happen this fall. So, guess that's on me. But, yeah, the Model S and Model X are definitely drastically better. When I did the test drives of the Model X, I didn't test drive a new Model S yet. But it's a great car. It's an amazing car. You know what? I skipped a clip for the retail investor section, and I'm going to go ahead and play that now. It's only about 15 seconds, the answer. But it's basically what's going on at the Lathrop facility. What is Tesla up to there?
And what is the new Lathrop facility?
Nothing major. We're distribution warehouse.
Yeah, we're optimizing the real estate, try to consolidate everything under one roof, reduce the cost. There's not really nothing special there.
Well, it does sound like it's going to give some room and some space for the Model Y to be built. So there is something special there. And anytime that Tesla can make things more efficient, that's a good thing for them, and it's a good thing for us as consumers. In our next clip, someone asks about reconfiguring the production floor at Fremont so that the Model Y can be built.
Listening to you talk about mix here and the fact that you're running a single shift at your SNX facilities in Fremont, I'm wondering, is there maybe some potential to reconfigure the floor space there a bit, and is that something that you're thinking about?
Well, we are reconfiguring the floor space in Fremont, and there's quite a lot of factory space that's currently taken up with the SX parts warehousing, or parts for the SX line, and we don't really need that. So that's where we're putting a lot of the Model Y activity. Jerome, do you want to?
Yeah, we're improving the material delivery for SNX, just like we have done for Model 3. I've seen some radical improvements. We reduced production part warehousing cost by, again, 90%, 90, since Q3 last year.
Yeah.
And so we're making a lot of room. We're much more efficient with parts delivery. It helps that we're increasing production, actually. And so that space that we cleared out, I'm looking at it right now, in Fremont, we're just going to put Model Y stuff in there. So if you visit the factory from, I would say, every 6 months, you'd have a hard time recognizing and finding your way. Yeah, it's constantly changing and evolving. Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
So I was going to say, like, the efficiency of this factory, both Fremont and Giga, is like the rate of improvement, which is not slowing down, has been incredible. It's like, you're just like, you can feel it and see it.
And just as a follow-on then, could we see you manage to make 8,000, or, you know, 7,500, 8,000 Model 3s in Fremont by the end of the year, you think?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I feel confident the trend is very clearly towards being able to get to 10,000 vehicles a week, of which that would be, you know, there's very rough numbers like 83 to 8600 Model 3s and the balance in S and X. So sort of, you know, 1600 to 1800 SX and, cool, yeah, in round numbers, 8500 3s, 1500 SX per week, but probably a bit more than that.
Towards the end of the clip there, the gentleman was talking about increasing Model 3 production numbers to get to that really close to that 10,000 a week goal that Elon set a long time ago. And my guess on this is that Tesla is not super worried about hitting that goal at this moment, because once the Model Y rolls off, probably sometime, you know, fall, late summer of 2021 is my guess, just a complete and total guess, that Model 3 is going to, it's still going to be popular, but demand for the Model 3 is going to go down. And I don't think they're going to need to worry so much about hitting that 10,000 a week mark, because the real number will be getting, or the real test will be getting the Model Y to that 10,000. And, you know, probably the Model 3, if I had to guess, the Model 3 is going to hover, you know, around 7,000, and that'll be 7,000 a week, and that'll be great for the demand for the Model 3. But the Model Y, it's probably 10,000 or above. That's my guess. I don't know. But based on doing this show for 3 years, I really feel strong in my heart. But I also felt really strong that they were going to do a redesign on the Model 3, or on the Model S and Model X this fall. So we'll see what happens next year around 2021, or next year around the summer of 2020, excuse me. All right, we're almost done here. The next clip, we're going to talk about Model S and Model X demand, and that kind of goes along with, is Model 3 cannibalizing Model S and Model X?
Okay, and can I have a follow-up question around Model X and Model X saturation? You know, obviously you guys have some ideas around how big that market is. How should we be thinking about sustainable volumes and pricing on those volumes? You know, obviously we're seeing some lower numbers here, and I think that's a core element of what's going on with the story, that as we see pricing drop and volumes drop, what are the right numbers to think about for you guys from a planning standpoint in terms of sell through on both the Model S and Model X?
Yeah, I think there's probably a bit too much focus on S and X. And is this the S and X are they're nice, but they're not, you know, and I think it's like we, you know, without them we couldn't spell sexy. So you know, so that, like, I would say, like, you know, the main reason, well, not the main reason, but a reason is we want to keep spelling sexy. So that's that is a reason, I should say, not the main reason, but the a reason to keep going with S and X. But the story for Tesla in the future is fundamentally Model 3 and Model Y, and you know, I think, like I said, like my guess is like long term sales of long term, meaning, you know, in a couple of years type of thing. The demand for sales, demand for and 3 is like on the order of 750,000 units a year, and it's probably 1.25 million units a year for Model Y. So the combined is like maybe 2 million from those two vehicles alone, and then SX is like, you know, maybe 80 to 100K a year. So it's like 4 or 5% of the volume of 3 and Y. And then you throw like a truck in there, pickup truck, and tell the semi, it just gets smaller and smaller. So, you know, they're great products, but they're from a volume standpoint, they're, you know, not all that important in the long term.
So Elon's downplaying the S and X for now. I do believe that it plays probably a bigger role, or is more important than he's letting on. And I really believe in my heart that they have something special coming for the S and X that's going to put it back on the map. Because it's true, when I talk to my friends, they think that the S and the X are not as sophisticated as the Model S. And because of that, I'm guessing there are other people out there who think the same things. Now, I don't get that when you folks email me, because you guys are tuned in and turned on and you know what's going on. But my friends are just, you know, regular mopes that are hanging out and seeing this on regular TV news. And they're like, oh, the Model 3 is out. It must be better than the Model S. And I think a lot of the reason why people think the Model 3 is better than the Model S and or X is because it's like the iPhone or the Samsung phone, or they're an Android or Apple person. But when a new iPhone comes out, it's better than all the other iPhones. And Tesla is a car company, but they're also a technology company. So when a new car comes out for Tesla, it's the better one. That's my, based on, you know, informal polling and just talking to random regular people about this stuff, that is the impression that I get, is that, oh, it's Tesla's a technology company. The new car is the biggest and best thing that they have. And that's not necessarily true. And Tesla does need to get their message out there a little bit better about the Model S and Model X to the folks who can afford it. Of course, not everybody can afford a $90,000 to $100,000 car. Our next clip is about distribution, but it kind of runs into or rolls into service centers and sales. And I thought it was actually pretty interesting.
I'd like to ask you, Elon, about distribution. So you made you guys made a big change in at the beginning of the year, going from like an almost 100% online distribution model. You tried to push back on test drive and get people to buy the car, try it, and return it if you don't like it. So could you give us an update on how it is progressing? Do you see Tesla becoming mostly an online distribution, following an online distribution model? And I saw you open 25 new retail locations in the quarter. So how do you see your retail footprint evolving over time?
Actually, I was saying we opened 25 service locations. I think really what we find is that the word of mouth for Tesla is incredibly good. So once there is a nucleus of customers in a particular area, that they love the cars and they talk to all their friends about it, and that's really what drives sales. So you can think of like a retail location is kind of like a viral seed in an area. It would grow organically by itself, but the retail location essentially is like a viral seed. They aren't needed. They're like an accelerant. What is needed for sales in any given area? And I'd say this is worldwide. Frequently we're told like this country is different or that country is different. I'm like, people around the world pretty much want the same thing. So, in my experience, you have to have a service location that's convenient. So it can't be like you've got to drive 5 hours to a service location. You have to have service. You have to have supercharging and charging well sorted out. You've got to have good consumer financing, and then the price must make sense. And any place where those four things are true, our sales are great. So we're rolling out service centers like crazy. So service centers are the key to sales, not the retail locations.
Yeah, and we're going city by city on the service center point. We're looking at where our populations are of existing customers. We're mapping driving time from those customers to the service centers, inclusive of traffic, to improve densification of our service centers in the locations in which our customers currently reside. We do have areas that are underrepresented with service centers where the drive time is too long, or there are populations that don't have appropriate access to charging their service centers. And we're working as fast as we can to get places up and running in those areas. So it's very systematically being mapped out with a focus on service and supercharging as opposed to a retail presence.
Yeah. Now, supercharging is incredibly important. If you can't just have like 80% of the routes that somebody wants to take. You need 100% of the routes. Because a car is like is really freedom to travel. And anything that inhibits freedom to travel impairs the fundamental value of the product.
Or perceived.
Yeah, exactly. Real or perceived. Yeah. Freedom to travel.
All right. We'll get to our next clip here because we're pushing up against an hour. The next clip is about full self-driving and what markets is it going to be available in. And really the big sticking point for Tesla is the EU, the European Union, because of regulations that they already have in place.
Elon, you mentioned the importance of full self-driving for gross margin. You've also mentioned the importance of China. Do you expect to be able to offer the full self-driving suite that you plan to offer in the U.S. and China, and I guess even in Europe, where they've been a little bit tougher on regulating?
Yeah, we expect to be able to offer full self-driving actually everywhere except EU, because there's just some committee rules that were put in place years ago that need to be changed. It's not from a technical standpoint; it's very doable, but we just need to work through the regulatory committees to get the regulatory approvals and rules changed, and it'll just take a bit longer than other places. But I think we'll see a lot of pressure from our customers in Europe to have these rules changed so they can have access to full self-driving. And I think at the end of the day, regulators will answer to the public. So I think that's. It's just a temporary thing, and it's quite specific to EU rules. And we were just not present really when those rules were drafted, so they sort of got put in place, but they don't make a ton of sense. But we just got to work through the process to change them.
If full self-driving is what Elon promises it is, I don't think they're going to have any problems with the European Union. Because they can prove that they'll be able to prove that it's safer if it does what Elon says it's going to do. That's kind of the big if. Hey, before we go on to our last clip, I do want to say hello to Frank. Frank hit me up on Twitter this week, and I really appreciate it. Hi, Frank. Our last clip today is about parts availability.
Okay, and then the second question is, you mentioned service a number of times. There's obviously been some, I think, growing frustration with owners. And you mentioned, parts availability, and you've eschewed the dealership model. I guess, how do you plan on increasing parts availability without the corresponding working capital commitment that would be required as the fleet continues to grow?
It's actually just taking the parts that were stored in a bunch of warehouses and just moving them to the service centers. The thing that makes sense is to have the service centers where the parts are kind of all on the wall, and it's like a supermarket. You always know where the Cocoa Puffs are, and you can just go immediately there and go and grab it, and then you just replenish the shelves with parts. And so we're basically putting all parts that are used more frequently than 6 weeks on the walls on service centers. So there's no ordering of the part. You just go take off the shelf and put it on the car. We really want to get to not merely same day service, but same hour. Sort of like Jiffy Lube, but applied generally to service.
Yeah, and specifically on the working capital piece of this, we actually have a significant amount of service parts inventory. The challenge is it's just not at the service centers.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the lag that is experienced is we have to get the part from the distribution center to the service center. And so by localizing the parts, I don't expect that to be a large working capital drain on the company. It might actually be the reverse.
I agree. Where
we don't need to store as many parts centrally.
Yeah, and also just having parts, if they're made if we make them internally or if they're made at a supplier, just sending them directly to the service center instead of having them go through a bunch of distribution outlets. In fact, when I was in China my last trip, I was asking the China team, hey, is there anything silly that we're doing that we should fix? And they said, yeah. Several of the parts that require replacement are literally made in China, and then we end up shipping them to New Jersey and then back to China. And could we please just ship them, literally across the road? Mm-hmm. Yeah, no problem. There's all these, crazy things that happen, if you're, if you have a 45,000 person company, and then just kind of basically stop doing silly things is a lot of what is needed for improvement,
And as the scale of the business increases, the economics of localization of things like parts distribution make a lot more sense, whereas in the past when the company was smaller, having centralized centers, it was easier from a cost perspective. So, you know, the business thing, because the company is growing so fast, as Elon has mentioned, we have to continue to redesign processes and systems to restabilize ourselves at a new plateau of volume.
Yeah.
And then we'll grow again, and we'll need to rebuild those processes.
Yeah. I mean, Tesla's the only company making things in volume that is fully vertically integrated all the way through sales and service and charging and everything. So we really just need to look at total system efficiency and say, in the limit, if Tesla was the auto industry, how would we do it to maximize economic efficiency? We got to kind of like recalculate that optimization as we achieve greater scale. But I'm confident we can achieve a fundamentally better economic efficiency than the rest of the auto industry.
I really like the same hour service idea. Again, this goes back to my, you know, hatred of taking my car to a service center or a mechanic. It's really a fear. It's a fear that manifests as a hatred. But I honestly don't understand why this parts availability concept, having them at the service centers, is so hard for analysts to kind of wrap their heads around, because this is like the third time I've heard this question asked on a call. And it doesn't, to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, they already have the parts. They're just shipping them to the service centers that need them, pre-shipping them to the service centers that are probably going to need them. And I'm sure Tesla knows, based on the data that they're collecting in the areas, you know, what's going wrong with certain cars, and they can already pre-order, the system can pre-order the part. And before somebody even calls in, somebody may wait 3 weeks before reporting a problem. Well, Tesla's already got that information. It's like if you go to Amazon and you look at, you know, you look at a light bulb, a specific light bulb, smart light bulb, we'll say, 18 times, 20 times, eventually Amazon's going to ship that light bulb to a service or to a distribution center that's close to you, so that you can get that in 2 days when you finally pull the trigger. They already have all the data. Tesla already has all the data. I just don't understand why it's so hard for analysts to wrap their heads around this. And then, you know, Tesla's exercising common sense, which I think everybody would agree is amazing, because we want Tesla to exercise common sense. All right, everybody, that's it for me. If you want to email me, it's Bodie, B-O-D-I-E, at 918digital.com. Again, that's Bodie, B-O-D-I-E, at 918digital.com. Let's see here. You can follow me on Twitter, at 918digital. And that's the whole show. I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I will talk to you folks next week on my new Aero preamp. I'm very excited. I check the UPS site every probably 2 hours just to see, maybe it's going to come tomorrow. Maybe it's going to come tomorrow. Well, it won't come tomorrow. It's Sunday. But anyway, have a great week. I should be back on Friday, barring any screw-ups that I, you know, any mistakes that are my fault. Barring any of that, I should be back on Friday with a regular show. I really appreciate your patience. Have a great day, and thanks for listening all the way through.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.